Fan Junkies Radio is brought to you by FanJunkies.net, where sports meet social networking. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Fan Junkies Radio. I'm your host, Jonathan Ragus. Alongside me, as always, my partner in crime, the man who can't wait for Thursday because he loves his turkey, Mike McShane.
You got that one right. You got that one right. And the stuffing and all the sides that go with that. Yeah, oh yeah.
Amen, my friend. This is my favorite holiday.
There we go.
We actually have a caller right from the start, Mike.
Holy smokes.
So let's get to that call.
I think I know who this is.
I think we know who this is, too. On the line is Big Joe from the Bronx.
Yes, sir. It was good, guys.
Joey, how we doing today?
Doing pretty good, man. Jets won. It looked good. It's amazing what a little running game can do for the Jets, and it will make Sanchez look, you know, good.
Yep.
And they only had Tebow in for like a handful of plays. I think he was in there for a total of like, what, three plays or something like that?
Yeah.
You guys notice that with the less Tebow plays, the more efficient Sanchez actually looks?
Yeah.
Coincidence? I don't think so.
Listen, I'm going to go ahead and say right now, and I said this for the last few games that the Jets, and, you know, and it's something I've been noticing, is that putting Tim Tebow in, it disrupts the offense. When Sanchez is getting into a little bit of a groove, automatically, Tebow's on the field. What does that do? It just takes it down away. It takes a hot quarterback off the field where he's in a groove. It's just they don't know how to use Tebow. And for that, I blame Tony Sperano and I blame Rex Ryan. There's nobody else you can blame. I don't blame Tim Tebow. I think the hate at Tim Tebow, quite frankly, is disgusting. I don't think Tim Tebow has done anything to deserve the hatred he's getting from Jets fans and football fans in a whole.
Both
feel bad for the guy.
Both of you bring up very interesting points, and I made this point at the beginning of the season. We had a little bit of experience with this sort of arrangement here in Philadelphia back the last year of Donovan McNabb.
Yes.
When they were doing the Wildcat situation with Mike Vick, and Mike Vick would come in there and run a play or two or be running on, playing one play, running back off, then Donovan McNabb's coming back in, and it was a complete failure. And I brought this up early on in the beginning of this season that I didn't know how well this whole situation was going to work, that I wasn't terribly confident because I didn't see any success with it here in Philadelphia.
No, and you're right. You're right, man. You're totally right. It's almost the same thing going on.
Yes.
It's crazy, too, because more often than not, Sanchez, you know, that first down, he'll get like a good 5-6 yard pass, whatever. Then they'll bring Tebow in. Tebow lose a good, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 yards on the play. So now you're asking Sanchez to come out on third down when it should be third down and short. Now all of a sudden it's third down and 8, third down and 9 or something like that. And you know Sperano's not going to be aggressive. He's going to be very conservative. He's going to call some quick little screen pass or whatever. And more often than not, they end up falling short and then they end up punting.
What happens there? It becomes predictable. The defenses then know exactly what's going to happen. I mean, when you're going constantly into a third and 8 or third and 9, third and 7 situation, the defenses are they know exactly what you're going to do. And with the offensive line that he has in front of them, it becomes very, very difficult.
Yeah, they can blitz him, and they know that the odds are they're going to get a sack.
Exactly.
Well, listen, you know what? If you look at Sanchez yesterday, when this team actually plays good and plays as a whole, Sanchez can do what he needs to do. Yesterday, he had 118.3 quarterback rating, 15 for 20, 178 yards. You know, I'm not particularly impressed with the yardage that he had yesterday, even though he did have a touchdown. What I'm impressed with is that he spread the ball to about 12 different receivers yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, Schillings, Curley, Powell, McKnight, Rulon, Keller, Gates, Cumberland, Hill, Hilliard. I mean, come on. That's just great.
Yeah.
You know, not only that, we got to give huge props to Bilal Powell, who not only had his first career NFL touchdown yesterday, but then right after had his second career NFL touchdown. Mm-hmm. You know,
hey,
when this
look.
Team actually plays and they call good plays, they play good.
Hey, look, they might have a nice little three-headed monster there, those three backs.
They should. I mean, unfortunately, you know, McKnight keeps getting injured. They don't use Powell the right way, and I've been saying that for a long time now. You know, unfortunately, it all starts with Sean Green. I mean, he needs to play the way he's played his first couple of years in the NFL, and he's not playing that way. But again, I hate to say it, I blame Sperano and I blame Rex Ryan because I don't like the plays that they're calling for their running game.
Well, there you go. And that, we've talked about that before. But one other place, though, that I will give the Jets a little bit of props on, you know, a lot of people looking at this game from the outside, looking in at it, would say, well, now, come on, it's against St. Louis. You know, the one thing I will say for Jeff Fisher, and I know that he still has a lot of work to do over there with the Rams, and he's rebuilding that. The one place that I have seen a noticeable improvement this year with the Rams is on their defensive side of the ball.
Absolutely.
So I give the Jets props. You know, I know a lot of people will dismiss it and say, well, yeah, it was a 14-point win over a bad team. Listen, it's a bad team with a pretty good defense.
It's, you know what, a win is a win in the NFL. You have to take it. It counts every time. It doesn't matter who the team is because, Mike, we've seen it before. Bad teams have come into a game and crushed one of the better teams in the league.
Oh, no doubt about it.
Many times before, and not many people
won yesterday.
Yeah.
Cleveland almost beat Dallas yesterday.
Not even that. Jacksonville almost beat Houston. Cleveland almost beat Dallas. I mean, you know, and these are terrible teams. Arizona almost beat one of the best teams in the league in the Atlanta Falcons.
Yep.
You know? Any given Sunday.
You
guys are talking about being thankful and whatnot. Now, if we had hockey, I'd be thankful for that. Okay? Well, I would be very thankful if I was actually going to a Rangers game right about now at the Garden. Unfortunately, that's not happening. But I'm hearing that they're going to talk again, sort of this two-week hiatus.
They were going to resume talks today. I just got word a little bit ago that they are going to resume talks today at the union's request because Bettman wanted to have a two-week vacation. The union said, absolutely not. We still need to talk, and they're actually going to meet later today in New York City. So,
well, good for Donald Fair, I guess.
Good for Fair for being aggressive and trying to get this thing done. I mean, I heard about some fan that wrote a letter to him, and he actually responded by, you know, sending a letter back and explaining.
You know, to be honest, his secretary responded with his signature on a stamp.
Yeah, well, you know. That's more than what Buttman's doing.
You got that one right, Joey.
I told Mike when Mike told me, you can write a letter to President Barack Obama tomorrow, and I guarantee you're going to get an answer in the mail. It ain't going to be from Barack Obama, but it's going to be somebody in this camp.
Yeah, man. They just need to come to a solution to this. Because I'm telling you guys right now, if another NHL hockey season completely gets wasted, like, I know it was like 10 years ago, whatever it was. But if that happens again.
Yeah, not even 10 years.
Not even, right. If that happens again, dude, hockey's going to be on a respirator. Like, I mean, granted, you have fans like me, you guys are diehards also, and I know we will come back. I know that. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. I will be back watching Rangers hockey.
And I will too. And we'll be back watching Flyers hockey.
Exactly. But you have, and I've seen it during the playoffs last year. You know, when the Rangers were making their drive for the cup last year and whatnot, there were a lot of people that I know that could give a rat's tail about NHL hockey. And all of a sudden, they see me coming into work wearing my Rangers jersey, my Chris Kreider jersey and whatnot, and they're into it. All of a sudden, they like it. You know, they're like, oh, I saw the game last night. That was amazing. You know, Richards, he scored when the game was almost over the tie, blah, 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 blah. Those fans that you can gain, they're gone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're gone. Because you know what they'll say? Out of sight, out of mind. They're not diehard fans. So if they're not seeing the games being played, there's nothing for them to look forward to. And all of a sudden, it goes back to how they were before the Ranger playoff run. They don't care about hockey anymore. And that's a shame because hockey, as much as I love football, I love watching the Knicks and basketball and whatnot, baseball, the Mets and whatnot.
It's not the same, Joe.
Hockey is the greatest sport to watch, especially when you go see it live. There is no sport on this God's green earth that is as exciting as NHL hockey when you're in that building watching it live, especially postseason.
All the more important, too, Joey, that you say, out of sight, out of mind, this is hockey, all right? If it was football, out of sight, out of mind, not as much. I'm going to tell you right now. If it were baseball, but this is hockey. Out of sight, out of mind, you're absolutely right. People aren't clamoring about it because it's not a football sport. It's not Major League Baseball. If those were out of sight, out of mind, you're going to hear a little more of an uproar.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Joe, as always, you're one of our most favorite callers, man. Hope you call in on Wednesday. Thanks so much for calling in. You have a happy Thanksgiving, brother.
You too, guys.
All right, Joe.
Take care.
Love Joey, man. He's great.
Yep.
Good guy. All right. You know, we have a lot to talk about here. It's great to talk to Joey, but let's jump right into it. Mike, you want to talk a little bit about the BCS first?
Well, yeah, real quick. You know, I know Jonathan, you're not a big college football fan, but I got to tell you, and I'm going to be honest. I'll couch it this way. I'm not a big BCS fan. Frankly, I'm pleased to hear that there are efforts being made to try to change the playoff structure and the format of it.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, things got, in my opinion, really, really interesting this past weekend and really kind of fun. Kansas State, who was ranked number one, went down to Baylor 52-24. All right. Immediately following that, Oregon, the Ducks were playing against number eight Stanford. Oregon ranked number two. They similarly lost 17-14 in overtime, which left Notre Dame, who had played earlier in the day and had won, and I believe now is the last remaining undefeated team in the entire country, to go from number three to number one.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got Notre Dame ranked number one. Prior to Saturday, there was a lot of talk that potentially the SEC conference would not be represented in the Bowl Championship Series, which would be, I think, the first time in like 6 years.
Yeah.
Now, with the changes, Alabama now is back up there ranked as number two, and potentially if the season were to conclude, which it's going to be doing rather shortly in the next week or two, you could be looking at Notre Dame number one and Alabama number two playing in the Bowl Championship Series, and there you have it. The SEC would be represented again. But it would also be the first time that, and I think right now it is the first time that Notre Dame is ranked number one since 1988. So it's really kind of exciting to see these types of things happen. Not that I'm really necessarily rooting for one over the other, per se, but it's just exciting. You know, you kind of like to see things get shook up and mixed up a little bit, and that's what's happening over in college football.
All right, there you go. It's all about the Fighting Irish, man.
I guess so.
Is that the Fighting Irishman of France?
Thank you very much, my friend. You got that one right. talk about the ignominy of that one. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense. Come on, let's get it straight. But that's left for another show. This is supposed to be a thankful show.
Yes, so. I agree. So you know what? Let's dive right into the games from yesterday from the NFL so we can get into our whole thankful segment, because I think we're going to have a lot of fun with that, and hopefully we'll get some callers in for that too, so we can hear what people are thankful for in the sporting world. You know, first game we're going to talk about yesterday, Atlanta Falcons and the Arizona Cardinals, Mike.
Yep.
Falcons won 23-19.
Uh-huh.
You know, first quarter, Cardinals were up 13-0. Falcons came back, scored 16 in the second quarter to tie it up at 16 apiece.
Mm-hmm.
You know, luckily for them, Michael Turner, 1 yard run for the touchdown in the, with about 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter to take the lead. What did you think about this game? Matt Ryan, 5 interceptions.
He's the first quarterback. Are you ready? He is the first quarterback to not throw a touchdown, but have 5 interceptions and win the game.
Yes.
First time. And might I add, he threw for 301 yards.
Yep.
28 of 46. Ended up with a QB rating, thanks to all those interceptions, of a 40.5.
Yeah.
Now, Lindley had to come in for Arizona,
yeah,
who I think he's got to be their third, right? He's their third quarterback.
He's third in the depth charts. Absolutely.
And actually had a better QB rating than Matt Ryan did, coming up with 52.9 after throwing, he threw 9 times and, or he completed 9 on 20.
Yes, 9 on 20, sacked 3 times, no touchdowns, no interceptions.
So it was an interesting game. Can I tell you, I think in some respects, the game showed the flaws of Atlanta.
Yes.
Arizona really here's what struck me about it. It seemed like every time I was tuning into that, Arizona, it didn't matter who the quarterback was, Arizona was throwing into Atlanta's secondary, and they were completing the pass.
Well, not even that. You know, if you look at LaRod Stevens-Howland, who had a phenomenal game, 22 carries, 127 yards with a touchdown,
yes,
ran one off for 52 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Even him, he was running through the defensive linemen and the linebackers like it was nothing.
Yeah, and that's not what you would expect from Atlanta. I think Atlanta actually has had a pretty good defense.
Yes.
But I was a little bit surprised at how weak their secondary was yesterday. I don't know whether this was an Atlanta team that was kind of taking Arizona for granted.
Or, you know, coming off that first loss of the year.
Yeah. But you would think that would have them really, you know, riled up and ready to go. Well, that, you know, hey, we're going to go out there and make sure that everybody knows we're for real.
You know, 301 yards to 64 yards on the receiving end, and yet still no offensive touchdown from any of the wide receivers on Atlanta.
Right.
Now, yes, Michael Turner got that last touchdown, which took the lead and gave them the win. But if it wasn't for Jonathan Babineau's 15-yard fumble return,
right,
forget about it.
Right, right. Well, a defensive touchdown doesn't hurt, you know, particularly when you're a team like this one.
Exactly. You need to have defensive touchdowns when your offense ain't doing anything.
Exactly.
Michael Turner as well, 15 carries, only 46 yards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jaquizz Rodgers, I mean, they only ran 24 times yesterday.
Yeah.
So Arizona ran 26 times, but on 22 carries for LaRod Stevens-Howland, 127 yards and a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yesterday, Arizona, in the beginning, was all Stevens-Howland, Jay Seeley, and the Arizona defense.
Yep.
After that, I don't know what happened to them. I honestly thought Arizona was going to win that game. I honestly believe that if they were able to have Kevin Cobb in yesterday, I think they could at least had one more offensive touchdown.
I agree with you. I think if you had Kevin Cobb in there, but of course we could say that, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people in who are Arizona Cardinals fans who are saying the same darn thing.
Well,
this team has lost six straight now without Cobb.
Let me ask you this, Mike. How in the world can you have a class act old pro wide receiver like Larry Fitzgerald and throw over his head six times? He was targeted seven times only yesterday. With one reception for 11 yards.
Yeah, well, listen.
You know, let me tell you, if that was Kevin Cobb yesterday, I guarantee you Larry Fitzgerald would have had at least 5 to 6 receptions.
I would agree with you. I would agree with you.
And, you know, let's not get it wrong. We're not saying Kevin Cobb is an all-pro quarterback here.
No.
But he's a lot better than Skelton. He's a lot better than Lindley.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is why they're second and third on the depth chart.
Yep. So, I for one, never frankly thought that Arizona was going to win the game. I didn't even at the end, but I was a little bit taken back by the fact that it did appear that Atlanta had a bit of a struggle with him, and Matt Ryan was not very good.
No, he wasn't. He really, really wasn't. But, I mean, 5 interceptions, man. When I saw that number, I couldn't believe it because he's been one of the best quarterbacks in the league this season.
Yeah. And we had somebody here at the frat house who had them on their fantasy team, and it didn't go very well.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. I really don't doubt that. But, you know, once again, but still, 9-1. Atlanta is finding ways to win, and that's what we keep saying every time we talk about them.
Yep.
You know, you can't knock the Falcons no matter what. Even when they have an off game like they did yesterday, they stole 9-1 and still found a way to win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, good for them. Good for Matt Ryan. I like Matt Ryan. I hope he bounces back from that 5 interception game. I mean, he will.
Oh, well, no, I think there's no doubt about it. He will.
Yeah.
You know, it was a blip on the radar. That's all.
Well, it was a pretty big blip yesterday. All right, man. Let's go into the next game, and you know what an offensive game this was. They combined for 80 points.
Yep.
And what really baffled me was the Jacksonville Jaguars scored 37 points against the Houston Texans and took them to overtime. The Texans won thanks to an Andre Johnson 48-yard pass from Matt Chubb. Mm-hmm. At the end there, which is thank God for me because I started Chubb on two of my fantasy teams yesterday.
Yeah.
Chubb, though, 43 for 55, 527 yards with 5 touchdowns, 121.7 quarterback rating, Mike.
Yep.
But you know what? Which was great, but we cannot discount the fact that Chad Henne came into this game, threw for 354 yards and 4 touchdowns. Mike, before we talk about the Texans here, Is Henny going to be the starter? In your opinion?
No, I don't think so.
You don't think so? Even though the Jags fans want Gabbert gone already.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Henny had a good game last week when he came in.
Yeah, I...
And now he threw 4 touchdowns yesterday.
We'll see. We'll wait and see, but I don't know. I wouldn't... Let me put it this way. If it were me, I wouldn't do it, but...
Well, let me throw this at you now, too. Justin Blackmon, who Jacksonville had so many high hopes for coming out of the draft, Gabbert cannot click with Blackmon at all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You put Henny in, 7 receptions, 236 yards with a touchdown.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, even with Cecil Shorts, 81 yards.
Yeah, he had an 81. Right, I was going to say he had an 81-yard.
Blackmon had an 81-yard reception. Cecil Shorts along with 67. I mean, honestly, they're a 1-9 team.
Yep.
Why not give Henny a look to see if he is going to be the guy for them next year?
Well, you know, perhaps. You know, all right. I mean, I'll hear you on that one. I mean, I don't know. I just, to me, I wouldn't do it. This game, to me, Jonathan, was less about the, I don't know. I think it was less about the offense on the part of Jacksonville and more about the Houston defense. And the lack of defense.
Yeah.
That's where I really am surprised with this game. This is not the Houston defense that we expected to see and have come to expect to see showing up on the field.
It was bad yesterday.
It really was.
I mean, they still found a way to win, just like Atlanta did.
But they had to do it in overtime.
Yeah, in overtime. I mean, I could not believe that when I was watching Red Zone yesterday.
It went late into overtime. I mean, it was, you know...
There was only 2 minutes left in overtime.
Exactly. This could have ended. In fact, at one point, we're sitting here going, oh, my gosh, we're going to be looking at our second tie of the year.
Let me ask you, how much of an embarrassment would it have been for Houston if that tied? Considering it's a 1-8 team, and you have one of the better quarterbacks and running backs in the league, and wide receiver.
Yeah, I don't
that's
know.
That's a hell of a lot better defense than Jacksonville's offense, and yet they still scored 37 points and needed to tie.
Well, I mean, let's get it straight. Is it any more of an embarrassment than it is right now? I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I think Houston has a reason to feel embarrassed, even with the win. The game was tied at 16-17 going into the half.
Yeah.
They were losing after the third quarter.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, I think Houston has a reason to be embarrassed as it is, to be honest with you.
If it wasn't for Houston's amazing offense.
Yes.
You know.
I mean, they better get that defense in line. I mean, seriously. Otherwise, I got to start Miami's defense next week in my fantasy league.
I don't know, man. If you know what, I think if Henny starts next week, I think I might pick him up.
Well, there you go.
If he throws to Blackmon in shorts the way he did yesterday, an 80 and a 67-yard touchdown.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we'd have to take a look. I don't have the schedule right up in front of me for next week. Who is Jacksonville playing next week?
They're playing Tennessee. Come on.
Oh, well. Oh, okay.
You might
be on to something, my friend.
Listen, if Gabbert is injured and he's going to be out, I think Henny is probably going to be the most picked-up player in fantasy football this week.
You might be on to something.
And I think... I might be actually picking him up.
Shh. I know there's a lot of frat house guys out there listening.
I'm not a Chad Henne fan whatsoever. I'm a Jets fan. I hated Chad Henne in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
I hated him even when he took over for Chad Pennington, which pissed me off because I was a big Chad Pennington fan. He's looked damn good throwing to Blackmon, Shorts, whoever else he's been, Mercedes Lewis. Even with the running game, without Maurice Jones-Drew, Jalen Parmalee, 80 yards on the Houston Texans defense yesterday.
Well, you asked me about Henny, and you just bring up a very good point, and you said you hated him in Miami. Now, I think you probably hated him in Miami because he was in your own division.
Well, that's fine.
I think that's probably more the sentiment than anything else.
I think he was impressed, too. But
I, for one, was just completely unimpressed with him. I've always been unimpressed with Chad Henny. I think he's been overrated for most of his career. And that's why when you say to me, would I start Chad Henne, that's why I hesitate. Because I'm not terribly impressed with him. And I never have been.
The last two games, I honestly have to say, I mean, this doesn't look like the Chad Henne we've seen in Miami.
Well, okay, and you make a valid point there.
Is he older? Does he understand better what's going on? Does he know this is his last hurrah? I mean, either way, he's still in Florida. I mean, it's easy for him to retire and get one of those little places in Boca.
Yeah, well.
So, man, well, I hate that. You know, I was saying that he's older. He's younger than me, man. That pisses me off. Jesus Christ, man. And he looks like he's about 30 years older than me.
Everybody's younger than me.
Well, gosh.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, man.
All right, so there you have it. That's that game.
I was going to say something, but it's supposed to be a nice Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I know. We're being thankful today. Thankful.
Yeah, be thankful I didn't say it.
Yes, I am. Did I happen to mention I'm very thankful for my co-host?
You know what? And I have to say, thank you. I mean, because without you, man, this show would suck. Yeah. It would.
Oh.
You know. I don't know why. My cell phone's going off. People calling me, man. They know I'm on the air. Why are you calling me for? Stop it. Stop it. All right, Mike. Packers Lions yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, Lions have just been miserable. I'm sorry. You know, to me, the only bright spot on this team has been and always will be, at least for this year, Calvin Johnson. Another huge game, 143 yards, one touchdown.
Yep.
Game ended on another Matthew Stafford interception. He's just been miserable this year.
Yep.
You know, either way, you know, it was still a 4-point win for the Packers. They went 24-20.
Yep.
You know, what's going on with Detroit, Mike? I mean, we've spoke about it many times on the show already. What's going on?
Well, you know, I wish we could figure it the hell out, huh? I mean, I just keep every week I feel like I'm saying the exact same thing. It comes back to one player, and that's Matt Stafford. Look at these numbers: 17 of 39. Yeah, all right, that's fine. 266 yards in the air. He had a TD, but then there's those two interceptions. Jumping right back out at you again, and a 54.0 QB rating. This guy is not good. He just is not good. Look, they had the right game plan, in my opinion. LeSure, there he is again with 19 carries. They were balancing the attack out nicely. They had a good share of rushing going on. They were obviously, as you point out with Calvin Johnson, they were obviously getting the ball where it needed to be.
Yes.
In the air. But he makes mistakes at critical times when it really, really hurts the team. And that's what we've been seeing from Matt Stafford all year long.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. I mean, I came into this year having really high expectations for the Detroit Lions.
Yes, I did too.
I honestly believed that Matthew Stafford was going to go that way of being one of the elite quarterbacks in the league.
I couldn't agree with you more. I thought he was going to take the next step and be right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, still, you know, he's just at 3,000 yards on the season, 12 touchdowns. It's the interceptions that are killing him.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, you can't talk about anything else other than the interceptions.
Absolutely.
He's got 10 on the season already.
Right.
You know, I mean, just don't even look at the interceptions. If you look at Detroit Lions games in a whole, he's been throwing so poorly that you don't even have to look at the interception because he's been throwing a lot of missed passes, a lot of over people's heads. And let me tell you this. It's hard to miss Calvin Johnson.
Yes.
This guy could go up 10 feet in the air, grab something down, bring it right in, and he's shown that time and time again.
Yep, yep.
Now, we have to say, is this just a slump for Matthew Stafford? Are we going to expect something better from him next season? Or, you know, is this going back to the Matthew Stafford of 2009, you know, the injury plagued Matthew Stafford that threw 20 interceptions?
Well, good question. I mean, you know, which came first, the chicken or the egg? See, you know, here we go. I mean, were our expectations inflated because of one good season?
Yeah.
You know, you're asking the question, you know, are we going to see the old Matthew Stafford? Maybe we are seeing the old Matthew Stafford. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, maybe last year was the anomaly.
Yeah.
This guy's ranked 21 out of 33 quarterbacks in the entire league. 21st.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not this guy's not mediocre. He's below mediocre.
Yeah. Absolutely. But
so that's what it comes back to. I mean, you know, we've seen
mediocre quarterbacks do really good because of the team around them.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of people are going to have high expectations for Matthew Stafford. Don't get me wrong, he's not a miserable quarterback.
Well,
you know,
I mean,
last year he actually had a really decent season. It's just now, it's you know, I mean, you know, first of all, I you know what? I guess people really jumped the gun because it was the first season that they had Matthew Stafford for a whole season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 5,000-plus yards, 41 touchdowns last year, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
He's only got 12 this year.
Right.
In
okay.
10 games.
I mean, I'm going to say this, and I'm not going to make excuses for him.
No.
But I've not been pleased with what I've seen from the offensive line. I don't know. Jonathan, really, do you want to sit here and tell me that he doesn't have talented players around him?
Oh, he's got talented players
around
him.
Absolutely. That's
oh,
my
yeah.
point.
Okay.
So, I mean, you can't, can't point to the team and say, it's not the same team or the team's not playing for him.
No,
you know, we talked about Calvin Johnson. Calvin Johnson looks a hell of a lot better than he did a year ago. So, but take a – you know, interestingly, you bring up Calvin Johnson's numbers. Yeah, he threw to him 5 times. He also missed him 6 times.
Yeah, not even that. They targeted Tony Scheffler 10 times.
Uh-huh.
10 times.
Why?
Why? Brandon, you know, you got Calvin Johnson. You got Brandon Pettigrew.
Yeah.
Why? I mean, what's going on here that you're targeting Tony Scheffler 10 times?
Yep.
And that's, you know, listen, I'm not going to take anything away from Tony Scheffler. I saw him make some really nice catches, running for some nice touchdowns. But he's a second to third depth tight end at best.
Absolutely.
But you're targeting him 10 times.
And it would be one thing, too, that if you could say, okay, well, wait a minute, the Detroit Lions are one-dimensional. They're just throwing the ball. No, you've got two good running backs in LeSure and in Bell. So, I mean, they do have a potential ground game.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're diagnosing the team. What does it go back to? As I started out saying, it goes back to one player. It goes back to the QB.
Yeah, let me ask you this. When Stafford went out in 2010, who was the backup quarterback for the Lions? Do you remember?
Good question. I do not remember.
I'll tell you right now because I'm going to make a point here. Thank God for computers. I tell you. Okay, I got it right here. Sorry, folks. Just stay with me for 1 second. Sean Hill. That's who it was. I forgot. Sean Hill.
Well, that's why we forgot.
Yeah. Sean Hill came in, and Calvin Johnson had almost 1,200 receiving yards with 12 touchdowns.
Okay.
With a healthy Matt Stafford in 10 games, he's got about the same receiving yards, but only 3 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Mm-hmm.
Why? I mean, Calvin Johnson is a guy who makes touchdowns happen.
Well, when you've got
what kind of quarterback you are. But why aren't you throwing to this guy in the red zone?
When you got a quarterback that's targeting you 11 times and you're only connecting with him 5, if that's the normal percentage, well, that's below 50.
Yeah.
All right? So it may not be a situation where he's not throwing it to him. It may be a situation where he's not getting it to him.
He's not. It's a shame because, you know what, Calvin Johnson, the best wide receiver in the game.
Yep.
You know, yep. No doubt about it. Can't question it. But either way, Lions are now 4-6 on the season, 2-2 at home. Packers win yesterday 24-20, 7-3. Got to give it up to the Packers. They held in tight. You know, beautiful touchdown pass, though.
Well, and I remember
– Bob at the end.
You know, what was funny, when you talk about last year's Detroit Lions team, I remember going into this very time last year, going into the Thanksgiving week, and Detroit was playing on Thanksgiving as they usually do. And, man, what a lot of anticipation there was about that Detroit game. I recall that it was actually a very good game. It was exciting. What a lot of anticipation. And here we go again. This is just another one of those Detroit Thanksgiving games where you kind of sit there and go, man, I hope it's the 1 o'clock game because let's get that one out of the way first.
I tell you, man. It's like, you know, some of these games you're expected to have a really great game and then it just, you know, I don't know, man. To me, there's been a lot of letdowns this year on the schedule.
Yeah.
You know, especially on the Monday Night Football and Thursday Night platforms, but, you know, it is what it is. I'm just glad to have football. One of the things I'm thankful for, Mike. So we'll get to that very, really shortly, though. So let's move on to the next game quick. A little less than 25 minutes left in the show. So let's not really talk too much about this one, Mike. Cowboys win 23-20. Browns take them into OT. Browns actually looked really good yesterday.
Yes, they did.
Brandon Whedon, still a terrible quarterback. We're not going to give him any credit here.
Back up. He did okay yesterday.
Yeah, but that's what I was getting to. He did okay yesterday. 20 for 35, 2 touchdowns, 210 yards. To me, Mike, I'm going to go right out. If they could have got Trent Richardson the ball in the red zone, got him into the end zone, I think the Browns could have easily have won this game yesterday.
No doubt about it.
With the Philadelphia Eagles losing yesterday, Giants with a bye week, Dallas pulls closer. They're now 5-5. They got a pretty favorable schedule coming up, Mike.
They have, in fact, I believe it was reported yesterday during the game, Dallas Cowboys have the easiest schedule remaining of any team in the NFC.
I would like to say it's the easiest schedule, but then again, it's the Dallas Cowboys.
Well,
look what happened with the Browns yesterday.
And listen, there was a period of time during yesterday's game where I thought, oh my God, Dallas is going to lose this game. I can't believe this. Dallas is going to lose this game. Cleveland had a 13-3 lead on them going into the fourth quarter. 13-3, okay?
Yeah.
It did not look good. Dallas came back and scored 17 points in the fourth to tie the game up and then won it in overtime from Dan Bailey.
Yeah.
But, Tony Romo, just inconsistent. You know,
not even that. If you look at what happened yesterday, the Browns hang around to push the Cowboys into OT.
Mm-hmm.
If this was the Redskins, who they're going to be playing twice with the next couple of games, the Bengals, the Steelers, or the Saints, those were losses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if you only gave Washington one of those games,
yeah,
that was losses. They're not making it into the playoffs. They need to be a totally, totally different team. And we have to see that defense from that we saw in week one against the Giants.
Mm-hmm. I have a lot of not a lot. I have a handful of friends of mine who are Dallas Cowboys fans.
Yes.
I would love to hear what the Dallas fan group is saying about Tony Romo. I have a sneaky suspicion that a lot of them are sick of him.
Yes.
And that, you know, they're probably calling for some sort of a replacement to him. However, I'm going to defend him for a moment, and I frankly think that Tony Romo is a victim of just really, really poor sideline play calling. I think that the problem with this team is they need new management on the coaching sideline. That's what this team needs. I'd like to see Tony Romo with a different type of offensive play calling structure.
Yeah. I mean, because he does show flashes of being a good quarterback.
Yes, he does.
But then all of a sudden, when it comes down to the end and it's all put on him, he just hasn't produced.
Well, and I think what's killing them right now is the fact that they're missing Murray.
Absolutely.
There is no ground game. Yeah, the Dallas Cowboys have no ground game whatsoever. So they are forced more and more for Romo to constantly be putting it in the air. Look, he put it in the air 50 times yesterday.
Yeah. Again, if you look at DeMarco Murray's numbers, you know, on 75 attempts, 320 yards, 330 yards, they only gave the ball to him one time near the end zone.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
Luke Jones already has 3 touchdowns.
Right. But, you know, that's what this team, in my opinion, needs. They need a ground game, and they need better offensive calling. They need to show a little more confidence in Romo, which this team just doesn't show.
Yeah. Agree.
So,
all right, Mike. Let's switch over to basketball real quick. We're going to talk about, you know, we've talked about this multiple times on the show.
Yeah.
You're a Philadelphia Sixers fan, Mike.
Yeah.
I told you from day one, beware of the Bynum.
Yep.
Didn't like the trade at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I still say it to this day. Did not like it when it happened. I knew right away, Philadelphia 76ers, they were going to miss a healthy Andre Iguodala.
Mm-hmm.
Now, comes out that not only is his right knee injured, but Andrew Bynum's left knee is now injured. Why? Because the guy who's rehabbing knee injuries went bowling and suffered a setback in his recovery because he injured his left knee now.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the question now. Forbes wrote a nice article today on the thing. I believe it was Darren Heitner, who I love over at Forbes. I think he writes some great sports stuff. Now, because of it, I mean, bowling is not a violation of the player contract. But considering that this was a player rehabbing a knee injury, and bowling is very costly on the knees, especially for a 7-foot guy who's going to have to bend down really low to get that ball on the lane, should the 76ers ask to have some of that money back now from his contract, Mike?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, and you know something, to be honest with you, Jonathan, I don't know if I'm calmed down enough to answer reasonably. Because can you say pissed, all right?
Hey, this is a Thanksgiving show, Mike.
Yeah, I know. I'm supposed to be thankful. this story really, really burns me up, okay?
Yeah.
The guy is supposed to be rehabbing.
Yeah.
What in the world are you doing out throwing a 16-pound ball down a lane for? I mean, what do you think? It's not going to do some sort of damage? This guy has a situation, I've brought it up numerous times. He has a situation that is similar to Chase Utley's, where the cartilage is slowly deteriorating in the joint. And not just in one knee, in both.
Yes, and let's put it out there now that for a basketball player, it deteriorates a lot quicker and a lot sooner than it does for a baseball player.
There you go.
Because basketball, very, very hard on the knees. I know that firsthand.
Well,
I'm sitting here on the radio and not on your TV screens making millions of dollars.
And listen, all the evidence you need to know is to take a look at Andrew Bynum's age, which is what, 24?
Yep.
So, and what? Okay, listen, I'm collecting $16 million a year from the Sixers. Yeah, I'm supposed to be rehabbing. Yeah, I got my guys out there on the court playing 10, 11 games. Yeah, I'm supposed to be sitting at home and maybe doing a little bit of exercising here and there to try to strengthen things. Let me go put in a couple of frames of bowling.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm annoyed. Should the Sixers do it? You know, I'm going to be honest with you. This is a new leadership group in the Sixers. It's only a bit over a year old. I don't know if they will. As a fan, it wouldn't bother me if they did. I think it sends a good message. But I don't know if they will. I'll be honest with you, Jonathan.
Let me throw this out to you now, Mike. He's been in the league 7 seasons now.
Yeah.
He's played 82 games once, mm-hmm. over 60 twice.
Yes, I know the numbers.
25-year-old player.
Yes, I know the numbers.
I told you from the beginning,
yes,
that I like the trade. I said it from the beginning. I knew Andrew Bynum when he was in high school. I tried dealing with him for interviews and other stuff. Didn't like his attitude. Thought by getting into the NBA, maybe he would mature a little bit. Still don't like his personality or his attitude. Mm-hmm. One of the things I don't like, especially when you have a guy who's a real class act in Evan Turner. Who, as soon as I knew of Evan Turner, heard him speak, loved his personality, infectious attitude, everything.
Yep.
Now you're going to – it's like the yin and yang here with Bynum and Turner. You know, Andre Iguodala has always been a pretty healthy guy. I have nothing but great things to say about Nikola Vucevic. I thought that was getting – you know, putting him in a deal I thought was going to be a real mess for the 76ers. We're already seeing that. Because, quite frankly, you would love to have Vucevic right now manning the center position. Mo Harkless, though, he's looked pretty good for Orlando.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, people said, well, we didn't give up a lot. Well, Bynum's on a one-year contract, $16 million.
Yeah.
If he never plays in the NBA again or never plays for the 76ers again, and let's discount the fact that, okay, whatever, you got rid of Andre Iguodala. You just gave up a first-round pick. Could possibly be somebody very good and could be a franchise player.
I think that's the bigger loss right there, Jonathan.
But the 76ers are looking good right now without Bynum, without Iguodala, without Chevich, without Hartman.
We're looking okay. What? We're just barely over 500.
Let me ask you this right now. You had Iguodala, Vucevic, and Harkless right now coming off the bench. That would only boost the 76ers.
I would take it, yeah.
Exactly.
To sum up where I've been, I was sitting back on my deck yesterday in between games, and I'm thinking about, what I might put together as my next op-ed piece for Frat House Sports. And it occurred to me that perhaps maybe one of the things I ought to do is a story on some of Philadelphia's biggest athletic busts, because I think Bynum probably might be in there right now.
Yeah.
High up there with somebody like who? Sean Bradley, right?
Yeah.
Who I think was probably the biggest bust that ever came to this city.
Bradley, what are you talking about, man? He's going in the Hall of Fame, man.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. don't get me started. This must be a thankful show. like I said, to sum it up, I mean, that's where I am with it. I am gravely concerned that we may not see this guy the entire season.
Yeah.
And that this is going to go down as one of the biggest mistakes ever in the history of any Philadelphia sports franchise.
Yeah. Yep. I agree.
And he just added fuel to the fire by telling us he went and injured it by playing by going bowling.
You know what? I think you gave me a nice idea, Mike. I think for next Wednesday's show, I think we should base our show entirely on biggest bust in sports.
Well, we can do that.
I think we should do that.
We can do that.
Yes. If you think we should do that, drop me an email. Drop Mike an email. info@fanjunkies.net.
Let us know. I like that one.
All right, but before we get off the whole Philadelphia 76ers thing, just want to throw this out there. Andre Iguodala, averaging almost 15 points per game, 6.9 rebounds, 3.9 assists. Mm-hmm. Nikolai Vucevic, 11.2 points per game, almost 9 rebounds a game, almost 2 assists a game. Mo Harkless off the bench, 4 rebounds a game. He had 10 points against the Knicks, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sorry. If they could redo that trade, I'd tell them they shouldn't have did it in the first place.
Well,
which I did, Mike.
You're my witness.
I did not like that trade, and I said it since when it was done. Why the hell did Philly get involved?
I hear you. I was one of the ones that drank the Kool-Aid and was very optimistic.
Unfortunately, I should have told you about my about my experience dealing with Andrew Bynum when he was in high school. So I didn't think about doing that. So. All right, Mike. We got 14 minutes left in the show. It's Thanksgiving, one of my favorite holidays coming up. So let's talk about what we're thankful for in the world of sports, Mike.
Sure.
Now, we're not going to do this by league. We're not going to do this by sport. You know, if you want to be thankful for everything in NASCAR, that's fine. If I want to be thankful for everything in the NHL and NBA, that's fine, too. But we're going to go back and forth here, okay, Mike?
I like that idea. Yeah, well, let's go back and forth.
A little one-on-one here. I'm going to give you the mic right now. One thing, what are you thankful for in the world of sports today?
You know, it's funny. You bring up NASCAR, and it never...
Number one on your list, you know it.
No. I'm just going to say it never, ever, ever even crossed my mind. I'm going to combine three things into one here for a moment,
shoot,
Jonathan. And I'm going to say this. When I was sitting there, I was given... And again, this was probably during one of those moments, you know, those solemn moments out on my back deck yesterday in between games. And I sat there with a pen and paper and pen in my hand, and I'm making some notes on what am I truly thankful for. The first one, but not the most important of them. I'm going to do these kind of in a ascending order, I guess. I'll tell you what I'm thankful for. I'm thankful for the fact that I was able to watch and witness Joe Montana, Barry Sanders, and Pete Rose play during their careers.
Yes.
Those three guys, in my opinion, are probably three of my biggest, I guess, sports hero icons in their respective positions. I don't think any quarterback I've ever seen a quarterback better than Joe Montana.
Yeah.
Some will disagree with me, obviously. Some will want to say that it's John Elway. Others might want to say it might even be Peyton Manning now. Others might say it would be Tom Brady. I don't know. To me, it was Joe Montana. With regard to running back, by far, I don't think anybody comes near, in my opinion, Barry Sanders.
Really, man? You weren't excited to watch Honolulu Hughes play in 1932? No, sorry, that's
it. It must be a thankful show, Jonathan.
Hey, I'm thankful for my sense of humor, man.
You're going to bust my age. I got to keep getting my age busted. Barry Sanders, without a doubt. And then Pete Rose. I mean, if there's, to me, a baseball icon in my lifetime, all right, I'm not talking about in the history, because there's an awful lot I do know about that preceded me. But in my lifetime, it would be Pete Rose. I think the world of all three of those. So seeing those three play during their career, that's something I'm thankful for.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, Mike, one of the things I'm very thankful for is, well, I have a lot to be thankful for in the world of sports. But what I'm most thankful for is there was a bunch of people that I got to witness play that I'm very happy that I got to see play. One of them, Barry Sanders.
There you go.
Don't think I'd ever see a better running back, ever. You know, there's been some really good running backs coming out, but every time I watch them, I said, well, Barry Sanders could have done that.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, he retired so early that he had a lot of football left in him that we could have enjoyed. Let's go to basketball. Very, very privileged, honored, and thankful that I got to watch Michael Jordan play for almost his whole career.
There you go.
Still to this day, I don't think we'll ever get to see a better basketball player, especially in such a tough game that the NBA was in the late 80s, early 90s.
I agree with you.
To dominate that game we witnessed something amazing, Mike.
I agree with you.
In hockey. Very grateful that I got to see and thankful I got to see Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, and yes, Marc Messier play. Don't think there'll ever be players or leaders like that in the game ever again.
Couldn't agree with you more. Wayne Gretzky for sure.
It's absolutely. Baseball. Lots to be thankful for. What I'm thankful for is I was around for the 1986 World Series champion Mets.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we'll ever get to see a team so vibrant, a team so new, and a team do things that nobody expected a professional sports team to do.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was sliding on the wet tarps at Shea Stadium instead of waiting in the locker room during a rain delay, watching teams drink a beer,
mm-hmm.
smoke cigarettes. You know, and I'm not saying I agree with the, you know, smoking cigarettes. I'm against smoking, of course. But I'm saying never, ever thought that we'd get to witness a team do that and be themselves. And for that, I'm thankful for.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, do you have anything else you're thankful for in the world of sports?
Well, yeah, I do, actually. I thought we were going to go back and forth and we would just trade one off and on and like we did. But yeah. Now, let me throw a couple out there real quick. John, and I'm thankful for NCAA basketball. Okay. And let me tell you why. In my opinion, NCAA basketball is pure. I know that you are a big NBA fan.
Yes.
However, I find the NBA to be so self-centered, it's all about me, particularly with some of these high-powered, high-star players. When I sit and I watch college basketball, you get to see basketball played in its purest form. It's a team sport, and they show you in NCAA basketball how to play it.
Yes.
Something else, and some people are going to find this a little bit surprising. Let me throw a Phillies team out there. Some are going to say that, Mike, he's going to be thankful for the 2008 Phillies. No. Nope. Some are going to say, well, it would be the 1980 Phillies. Nope. How about the 1993 Phillies? I'm going to tell you something. I loved that 1993 Phillies team that made it to the World Series but didn't win it against the Toronto Blue Jays. I just love that group of players. I mean, you had Crocker on there. You had Lenny Dykstra. You had Darren Dalton. You had Mitchie Poo. You had Tommy Green on there. Pete Incaviglia. Danny Jackson. Nicky.
Was there Roger McDowell on that team, too?
Was he? No.
93.
Oh, 93,
excuse me. Okay.
Yep. Terry Mulholland, Nicky Morandini, Ricky Church. This team, Wes Chamberlain, this was a team of a bunch of guys who were basically throwaways.
Yeah.
Who just got together and melded together in such a wonderful way. And it was just so much fun. It was a fun, fun team to watch. One more thing I'll throw out there that I am, and this is my number one. This is my number one that I am truly thankful for because I went in ascending order. So this would be my number one. And that would be the 1973-74 and 1974-75 Philadelphia Flyers. That team got me into sports.
Yeah.
It paves the way for me to go and play hockey as a young person. Mm-hmm. And I was a young person at that time. I was in my early teens. And what a spectacular group of players when you take a look at that team. And you got to start it off with Bernie Parent, and then you go to Bill Barber and Bobby Clark and Rick McLeish and, Jimmy Watson and Ed Van. I mean, just on and on and on. I mean, there's just far too many. Bill Clement was on the team. Barry Ashby, who ultimately passed away from leukemia.
Yeah.
But I look at that those 2 years and that Philadelphia Flyers, and I hold them up to the highest esteem. I am very thankful for them.
Yes. Well, what I'm thankful for, I'm going to go back to basketball here, Mike, since you started off with basketball, is I'm very thankful that I got to watch somebody play that tragically passed away in 1991 that most people never really paid attention to because they didn't understand the game of European basketball. They didn't know what they were getting at the time, but I'm very thankful that I got to witness and be a fan of Drazen Petrovic,
mm-hmm.
Who hailed from Croatia, where my family's from. So I knew all about him. This was a guy that opened European basketball to the NBA. Still to this day, the best basketball player to come out of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy that was on the level, or if not getting close to the level of a Michael Jordan, believe it or not, Mike. Mm-hmm. And if you don't believe me, you can actually type in on Google Michael Jordan's comments about Drazen Petrovic, who
right.
said that, you know, I couldn't guard this guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a phenomenal talent, you know, great personality, a young guy, you know, once again, a real tragedy that we lost him at so young when there was even rumors that he might be signing with the Knicks
mm-hmm.
That offseason. If he did, Knicks easily could have dismantled the Houston Rockets. Knicks could have been world champions in 1994 if he was with them still. You know, thankful for that. You know, God bless Drazen Petrovic that we got to see him play. Another thing I'm thankful for, we're winding down here, is my love for sports, Mike.
Yeah.
It's what propelled me to do what I do. I started off as a player. Knee injuries forced me to not play anymore. Had to be around the sport. Still, it drove me to do what I do now. Writing, blogging, radio shows, you know, video clips, whatnot. And it brought us here today to Fan Junkies Radio,
mm-hmm.
To something that we totally enjoy doing for the fans. You know, I'm thankful for the listeners we have. Very thankful for the members we have on FanJunkies.net. And, you know, by doing this, I'm also thankful that it brought you and me to a very good friendship, Mike.
Yeah, let me throw out two real quick. My children, they're the number one thing in my life. So, you know, thankful for them. And thankful for all my good friends. Thankful for all my good friends.
Yes.
People like Mark, Sidekick, Brandon, Jonathan, you, yourself, and my good buddy Russ.
Absolutely, absolutely. Good old Russ. Yeah, you know, I have to say too, I'm you know, I'm getting married in July. Very thankful for my beautiful fiance Alicia. She's, you know, my life. You know, never thought I'd have a, you know, a woman like that in my life. Very thankful for my seven nephews, my family. You know, my great friends, Mike. You're in there.
Thank you.
You know, thankful that I got to meet Dave and Brandon and everybody over at the frat house, and everybody became good friends. And, you know, and I'm thankful for the opportunities we're getting because of the partnership we have with Fan Junkies and Frat House.
Absolutely.
It's getting good. It's getting big. And, you know, it's been a lot of fun, and I can't wait to see what the future has for all of us.
I agree. Yeah. I agree.
Oh, you know, it's Thanksgiving, so thankful for some good food on Thursday.
Yeah.
You know? Thankful for a full belly, Mike.
You don't get that normally, dude, or what?
I But before, I mean, we only have a little over 2 minutes left in the show here, Mike. So let's start to wind down here. Just want to plug Wednesday's show. We have a great guest coming on, Mike.
Yes, we do.
The awesome Kim Anderson from the Lingerie Football League Chicago Bliss is going to be joining us at around the 12:15 mark on Wednesday.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, awesome talent in the league. Awesome personality. I've got to know her because of the Beat the Shark contest over on Fan Junkies. And let me tell you, she's by far one of my favorite people in the LFL.
Yep.
Just a class act and all of that. And I think people are going to want to tune in for Wednesday and, you know, hear what she has to say, because it's going to be an awesome show.
Yeah.
You know, she's a kick-ass person. Also, as always, head over to frathousesports.net. Check out the newest episode of 5 Minutes at the Frat House with our own Mike McShane and the Sidekick.
Yep.
Who actually spoke a lot in this episode.
Yes, he did.
It was a good one, and it was great. So go there, and also check out FratHouseSports.net for all the amazing content that's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And as always, check out FanJunkies.net. Sign up. It's 100% free. We really ask, you know, we really want you to sign up. It's made by us for the fans. It's a social networking site for sports fans, live game day chats, and so much more.
There you go.
Great show, Mike.
Absolutely.
You know, want to thank you, as always, for being my host here, my co-host. And thanking our listeners, we hope you all have a healthy, happy, safe Thanksgiving. For Jonathan Ragus, Mike McShane, see you Thursday.
See you then.
Maybe you're a 49ers fan in Jacksonville or a Jets fan in Houston, and you're looking to connect with fellow fans from hundreds or thousands of miles away. Look no further than FanJunkies.net. FanJunkies.net is a social networking site dedicated to fans of every team and every league. Connect with baseball, football, basketball, and hockey fans from throughout the country and throughout the world. Get the latest news, take polls, and interact in live chats on game day. And best of all, it's absolutely free to join. Sign up today at FanJunkies.net. FanJunkies.net, where sports meets social networking.